Chapter 29, Year 875 PXF, Spring. Winter dragged on, as it will in the mountains, well past when spring would have unfurled in the lowlands of Elerion. Even so, Thorn found having a routine immensely satisfying. Every morning, having somewhere to be and a schedule to follow, finally gave him something to which he could moor this new life. Also, having a co-worker and mentor relying on him and expecting him each day broke Thorn out of his swirling introspection, and he began to think of more than just his own needs. Thorn proved to be not terrible at the arcane. He would never reach anything like Nazji's skill, but between the little bits he had learned from Ramed and what Naz was teaching him, he at least felt helpful. He learned to shape metal and even manipulate the size of components so they were easier to work on. A steady stream of conversation filled Naz's lab as they worked, ranging from the mundane to the magical, and, eventually, the personal. Thorn could not help but be reminded of the easy and constant conversation that filled the smithy between Mikal and Riken. It made him smile to think that he now had that kind of relationship with Naz. Eventually, as winter in the mountains turned to spring, even though to Thorn it should be approaching summer, he realized it was time to tell Nazji all the details of his two lives, past and present. Not only because he longed to have a confidant in this new life, but also to learn more of the Vermilion Blade, and Naz knew more of enchanted armaments than anyone he had met. One evening at his apartment, he told Naz everything over a mini keg of stout and dark loaves of bread with creamed mushroom cheese. Naz took it all in, but, other than his support and empathy, had nothing immediate to offer regarding the Vermilion Blade. His draconic features wore a strange inquisitive look, but, for whatever reason, he held his tongue instead of speaking. Year 875 PXF, Early Summer. As the months wore on, Thorn began to feel restless under the mountains of Limehold. A trek to the main gates of Oldstone became a daily ritual to see if the snow here in the high peaks had finally melted and the passes through the mountains cleared for unencumbered travel. He anxiously felt as though summer must surely already be half over, the calendar telling him it was well after planting season in the lowlands of Elerion. Feeling more sure of his identity and himself as a person, Thorn resolved to tell Nazji he was going to leave Oldstone and return to the lowlands. To what end he wasn't sure, but something was drawing him back toward the region of his birth, and he felt he needed to follow it. Thorn picked the day after Hearth's Rest to break the news to Nazji, but when he approached his mentor, Naz jumped into conversation first.
"May I be intrusive for just a moment or two?"
Naz asked almost coyly.
"I have been thinking on your tale of your past life and something I have noticed."
Never knowing Nazji to be shy about most any subject, Thorn was intrigued, but also concerned.
"Your hands are healing."
He paused for emphasis.
"You told me those burns came from the fires of a powerful cursed weapon. The Vermilion Blade, correct?"
As Thorn nodded, Nazji continued looking deep into Thorn's eyes with probing concern.
"Cursed wounds like that don't heal. It just doesn't happen. Ever. Not in my experience or study. Not without the help of magics or miracles more powerful than I know, and I would wager more powerful than most in the city know."
He continued.
"Even the divine power of your sickle and chainmail combined would not have the power to manifest such a feat passively."
Thorn looked down at his hands. He had realized they were more functional than when he lived in the forest, and indeed even more so now than when he first arrived in Oldstone. But he hadn't registered the scar tissue had been slowly receding until this moment. His fingertips were now almost devoid of any evidence of their horrific burns. Nazji, seemingly embarrassed at asking the question, inquired,
"May I read you? Take a deep look at whatever energies are manifesting in you?"
Over the last half year, Thorn had hoped and felt that supernatural and magical forces were no longer shackled to him personally. The mention of manifesting energies inside of him made him want to run and flee from even the question of it. However, fear trapped Thorn in place. The familiar feeling of panic overwhelmed him, His breath came too quickly, his chest tightened, and his sight was forced into narrow, claustrophobic tunnels in front of him. From the moment he was thrown from Kasfarian's spring, Thorin had felt the influence of the Vermilion Blade, but could not track its presence. But what else could it be that still had a physical hold on him? Was the blade, or perhaps Tommen, still trying to transform him into a weapon for their purpose? Thorin saw that Nazgi could see his distress, but also that the Dragonborn did not know how to help him, as the panic kept rising and started to choke off his air.
"Thorin, may I use magic to calm you? I don't know how else to help," Naz asked, beginning to panic himself.
Thorin couldn't speak and, hanging on the edge of consciousness, could only give a weak nod of consent. Thorin felt the wave of calming energy flow over him, his breath easing and sight returning to normal. He knew it was an arcane suppression of his panic, but was thankful for it nonetheless. Clearer of mind, Thorin was able to contemplate the question Naz had asked, if he could face the answers it might give. He still almost said no. However, the secrets of his bloodline had cursed his previous life, and he wasn't ready to risk another to its influence, so he relented to the request. Nazgi brought Thorin into the lab opposite the one where they analyzed his armor. A series of complex runes and sigils formed concentric circles on the floor and walls, covering almost every surface. Nazgi placed two wooden chairs facing each other in the center of the arcane etchings, motioning for Thorin to sit in the one further from the door. He then exited and returned with two palm-sized, intricately etched crystals, placing one in each of Thorin's hands. An irrational panic began to rise again. Even though he saw the other chair in front of him, he feared he would have to go through whatever was about to happen alone.
"Don't worry, I'll be with you the whole time,"
Naz assured him as he sat in the opposite chair. He then took Thorin's hands and began to mutter a long incantation bolstered by the runes and crystals. Even Thorin's limited training told him this ritual was far beyond the spells Naz had used to read the armor in the other lab. Around Thorin, the runes on the walls and floor began to glow and rotate in their circular paths, and a brilliant white light began to shine from between his and Nazgi's fingers. When Nazgi looked up, his eyes shined like pools of liquid mercury, with glowing runes spinning within them as he peered into Thorin's gaze. Thorin could see the twitching of Nazgi's scales and the rapid rotation of his mirror-like eyes as he read whatever was etched onto his soul. Finally, Naz shuddered, then gently withdrew his hands from Thorin's, taking the crystals with them as the sheen on his eyes faded. Setting the crystals aside, Nazgi then took Thorin's right hand in one of his and placed his other hand over it, and in a tone Thorin knew from Balanon's training long ago, Nazgi delivered the news.
"You are still cursed."
The words fell on Thorin like a sledge, but the worst wasn't over. Nazgi continued.
"It's like nothing I have ever seen. Ancient and degraded, but somehow twisted and remade. It writhes like an eel caught in a net, not wanting to be discovered, but longing to be seen. The curse is alive."
Nazgi's words mortified Thorin as the idea of a living curse twisting inside him settled in. Nazgi continued somberly, answering Thorin's unspoken question.
"I do not know what it is doing to you or what it has done already. I dare not break it or probe further, as it has found a tenuous balance within you. All I can tell you is that it is neither good nor evil in nature, but at the same time, it is also both."
Nazgi squeezed his friend's hand comfortingly.
"As I said, balance."
How Thorin got back to his apartment in the Pillars, he did not know. Naz must have guided him there and brought him to his bedroom. Thorin sat on the edge of his bed, his shoes somehow off, and a soft tunic had replaced his work jerkin and chainmail shirt. He saw and heard Naz as he stood at the bedroom door. He said sternly,
"I will check on you tomorrow. I'll bring fresh sourdough and cream mushroom cheese for breakfast by the time Sunhall begins to wake."
Thorin sat on his perfectly normal bed that he had freshly made that morning, surrounded by the rippling light of the silver vein that always filled his apartment, yet he felt like he was plummeting in a free fall. His stomach was in his throat, and the world was sliding past him in a dizzying blur. His morning had started with plans to travel back to the lowlands and a notion of even checking in on Arnador. But now that all had evaporated. Cursed.
Still? Again?
Thorn couldn't even keep track. Was he becoming that horror from the Vermilion Blade's vision, or some other foul nightmare of its creation? Thorn looked at his now unscarred fingertips, and while they seemed a blessing, he couldn't be sure of anything anymore. Would he forever be a danger to all those he knew, or would ever know? Thorn looked at the chainmail shirt and thought of the coin he had seen it destroy. Ripping off the tunic Naz had put him in, he donned the armor and let it lay against his bare skin. In that moment, Thorn couldn't have said if he was looking for assurance of the good within himself or the release that was demonstrated on the coin. Standing in his bedroom, whole and unburnt by the armor, Thorn sighed.
What should I do?
Dark thoughts whirled around in his mind, but the one that stuck with him was Castian's words from the previous autumn.
Find a deep enough place in the mines, and the human world need not see you ever again.
Thorn considered packing and heading to the Frostforge depths on his own, or purposefully losing at the dice halls in the Mist Market so the Frostbeards would indenture him. But he knew Nazgi would find him or pay his debts to have him released. Not to mention, to cross the Frostbeard clan was its own form of a curse. So, still wearing the armor, he sat back down on his bed and waited for Nazgi's arrival the following day. Thorn had eventually laid down, curling into as near a fetal position as a man of his size could form. He had already been awake for hours when he heard Naz come in and start puttering around in the kitchen. As Thorn lay in his bed, the oversized dragonborn furniture his eyes fell upon seemed much larger than they really were, and so he felt so much smaller. Talon had years of life before facing the trials of the Vermilion Blade and his bloodline, but Thorn felt like little more than a child. How could Thorn survive this? Would he have to fade away to allow Talon to return to solve the problems that now burdened Thorn? If that happened, could Thorn, as he was now, ever return? With a sigh filled with the exhaustion of his thoughts, Thorn reluctantly sat up and forced himself out of bed. Stepping into the great room, he saw Naz had tidied up and set out the food he had promised, luring Thorn to the table. They mostly sat in silence, Nazgi being a quiet, comforting presence instead of trying to fill the space with one-sided conversation. As he packed up to leave, he promised,
"I'll be by tonight with Stout and the King's Fair from the Lambshank."
Thorn almost asked Naz to stay, but then realized he was going into the workshop and couldn't add the guilt of keeping Nazgi from his job to everything else, including that there was no way Thorn could join him. So it went for nearly a week, Naz stopping by twice a day with sustenance and company as Thorn's mind processed his fate. Then, finally, the depression broke with the arrival of a branch of high mountain apple blossoms carried in by Nazgi one morning as he brought breakfast. The smell filled Thorn's small residence and transported him to the autumn long ago, lounging in the limbs of Milgren's orchard with Ryken, a 22-year-old memory from a person who no longer existed. That an aging yet somehow new person such as Thorn could still be moved by such was both ridiculous and silly, but sometimes that is what hope takes, the impossible folly of faith. After eating, when Naz usually tidied up before heading out, Thorn got off his stool at the high table in the kitchen and said,
"Let me grab some clean clothes. I need to stop by the Cascades, but I will meet you at the shops."
With a relieved smile he could not hide, Naz replied as offhandedly as he could,
"I could use a steam myself. Mind if I join you?"
Then, without any undue fuss or concern for perceived fragility, Naz and Thorn fell back into their routine. The only change was Thorn's voracious focus on learning about the enchantment of objects and armaments.